Welcome back into the Panthers podcast. Max Henson and Brian Strickland here with you again, as always. And, you know, look, Brian, here we are talking about Carolina's loss to the Saints. And, you know, this was built up as a big matchup, obviously. Two 8-3 teams, NFC South, first place on the line. You know, a lot of hype surrounding that game. And obviously, this outcome was possible. There was, of course, talk about if the Panthers would win this game, of course, how that could set them up in this division race, but also the possibility of losing it. And now here they stand, coming away from that game after a 31-21 loss. And, you know, where does this Panthers team go from here?
Yeah, still 8-4, still in playoff position. Certainly something to remember, but understandable why it was such a big game. And doubly so because, well, doubly, the players always talk about the division games counting twice. So what did this one count, four times? Twice that, maybe?
Yeah.
Because of the loss back in Week 3 in Charlotte to the Saints. I mean, it's only a one-game deficit in the division, but the tiebreaker is completely the Saints now. So the Saints literally, if they go 3-1 the rest of the way, there's nothing the Panthers can do to win this division.
Right.
So that's
right.
Where that's opportunity lost there. But, you know, obviously we know there's a lot of football left to be played, and it's about getting into the dance, and this team is still in a good spot to do that. Now they get to come home for three consecutive games, and, of course, they need to really take advantage of that.
Yeah, so the division race isn't over, but it certainly feels like New Orleans has a bit of a stranglehold on it right now,
right,
with four games left to play. And you got to give New Orleans credit, right? I mean, 0-2, they came in here at Bank of America Stadium in Week 3, got a decisive victory over a Panthers team, obviously went on that run where they won 8 straight, lost to the Rams, then hosted Carolina this past Sunday, as we mentioned, and got another, you know, pretty convincing win against this Panthers team. Obviously, you know, Carolina cut it to a 10-point deficit when all was said and done, but again, it was the Saints who very much were in control of this game throughout, Brian, and, you know, that's you get to play these guys twice, home and home, and in both cases, the Saints really took care of business against this Panthers team.
Yeah, I mean, they look good doing it. You're right, Max. I mean, that running game was as advertised. It wasn't as big a factor back in Week 3. I think the thing I remember most from that game was the pass rush and the Panthers struggling on offense. But, you know, this past week, the Saints did the job on defense again against this offense. But, I mean, that running game that has really been clicking in a way that people in New Orleans haven't seen, I mean, maybe ever. I feel like the Super Bowl winning team certainly was proficient in the running game, but still I think that started with Drew Brees and an opportunistic defense. But it's interesting, you know, people talk – it's sometimes easier said than done in this league. You're to stop things, you know. You know you got it rolling if they kind of know what you're going to do and they still can't stop it. And that's kind of the case because we heard all the talk leading up to the game about how the Saints – running game is rolling. We always hear from Steve Wilks about got to stop the run first and foremost, and then they did what they've been doing. They're on an amazing run here, pun intended, 5 straight weeks for Alvin Kamara and Mark Egan were kind of tearing up the league. So, you know, that was really the key right there. The Panthers certainly don't feel like they played their best against that season-high missed tackles. That's where we are now after the Saints really took care of business at home, and that's a tough place to play regardless of how that team's playing.
It is. Look, it's a tough place to play, but, you know, it's interesting that what you're saying, Brian, is exactly what I was thinking too. You know, all week the talk constantly about how good this Saints running game is and how important it was going to be to stop that, and I think it's a sign of a really good offense when they can run it when everybody knows they want to run it, and you do everything you can to try to stop it, and you can't. And that's a credit to the talent of those runners, Ingram and Kamara, especially the rookie. Kamara are just really tough to bring down. I mean, he's proven that early in his career, how difficult a guy he is to stop. He's one of the most productive offensive players in the NFL right now. And we were talking about a guy who was passed over by everybody multiple times in the draft and is now proven a lot of people wrong for doing that. And you know, you've got Drew Brees back there, and when you've got a running game to complement him, it's very difficult to stop that offense. And it was a frustrating day overall for a Carolina defense that has a very high standard, and it just seemed like whenever the Saints needed a play, they were able to get it, whether it be on the ground or through the air. Drew Brees had too much time back there in the pocket to get some of those chunk plays in the passing game, and they were very much in control, it felt like.
Yeah, and it is a dangerous team when you think about it. I mean, we talked about the run game. You mentioned Drew Brees. It's amazing how – I mean, obviously he's not the forgotten man, but it's such a luxury for them right now to have a situation where you know, last couple of years, at least the last couple of years, it's been, you know, win or lose with Drew Brees, so to speak. Like, can he outscore the other team with his arm and make enough plays? I don't want to say he's an afterthought by any stretch, but it's quite a luxury that he doesn't have to try to do but so much. And that paid off, of course, in positive ways for the Saints. Because once you get that run game going, the Panthers know all about this, and they love to, you know, take this approach. They got the play-action game going, you know. The touchdown, big touchdown after the Julius Peppers flag on the sidelines was you know, vintage Drew Brees, where he looked off
yep.
one of the defenders, you know, found a guy, and that was, correct me if I'm wrong, that's like the one play he kind of had to make, so to speak, it feels like. And then otherwise the running backs kind of took care of business for him.
Yeah, I mean, they did. It was a really balanced attack from New Orleans. And, you know, as we said, for a Carolina defense that prides itself on being really stingy, it was a tough day. And you alluded to this before, Brian, but the missed tackles. I mean, that was the talk, certainly,
right.
coming out of this game. Steve Wilks, you know, being very honest and upfront with us when he talked to the media about
yeah. –
you know, just the fact that it was way too high a number of missed tackles, by far the most that they had had in a single game all season. He took accountability for that, but of course, the blame is going to be spread throughout for something
right.
like that. I mean, that there's a lot of factors that go into it, but it really started with that first drive of the game when New Orleans goes down. They have the ball first. They go down the field. It's fourth and goal, and I wonder, what do you think about the fact that if Shaq Thompson is able to wrap up Kamara on the 1 yard line and turn him away instead of kind of leaning a shoulder in, and Kamara bounces off for the touchdown. You think the tone of that game changes in a way that maybe leads it to a different outcome?
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see what would have happened. I will say, with the way Kamara runs and his body control, who knows? Like, this guy may still have found his way into the end zone.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
yeah.
We saw that later on a big third down conversion with Mark Ingram, when it's like, there's no way he's getting this first down, and he just somehow worked his way into that first down with a little push from an offensive lineman, as
yep.
I recall. And that proved to set up a touchdown that kind of put the Panthers away. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen what happened. I mean, you know, the Panthers came right back, I will say that, offensively, and had their first drive was their best drive of the day. They tied it up. But, yeah, to be able to make that stop there on fourth and goal from a momentum standpoint, I mean, how long could that have carried this team? You know, it's always interesting to me. Like, you so easily can point to a play like that. There's, you know, I mentioned the Peppers flag. I mentioned the Mark Ingram third down conversion. You know, the Michael Pilardi dropped punt. You know, it always can come down to four or five plays. But that being said, I mean, reality is, I think on that particular day, the Saints were the better team.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is something obviously we've talked about after the game, but we've been putting a lot on the defense right here in this opening part of the discussion. But this was definitely a loss shared by all three phases. I mean, everybody had a hand in this one. I mean, you talked about the Pilardi mishandled punt. Of course, Kalen Clay's fumble on a punt return, where it looked like that was maybe a moment in the game where Carolina could try to get themselves back into it. Defense comes up with a big stop deep in New Orleans territory. They're forced to punt it in midfield. And then just the air goes out of the balloon as soon as Kalen Clay loses control of that ball and the Saints take over. And then offensively, we haven't really talked much about the offense. But aside from that opening drive for them, which was really good, their first touchdown, Brian, on an opening drive all year.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the first quarter touchdowns just in general have been hard to come by for this team. I think that was just their third. But they get off to a great start, answer that New Orleans touchdown, make it 7-7, and then the rest of the day from there was just really inconsistent.
Yeah,
you know, all the way through the end of the third quarter from that opening drive, just a couple first downs and just 80 total net yards. I mean, it was tough for that offense to get out of what Cam Newton calls a lull, you know, and that was exactly what we saw down in the Superdome offensively.
Right. Yeah, and the Saints, you know, the Saints had a little bit of a lull as well, because after both teams scored touchdowns on their opening drives, both teams had, I think, three empty possessions. But the Saints, all of a sudden, boom, here comes the running game. The Mark Ingram had the 72-yard run, and they put up a second touchdown like that. And you think, okay, now it's time for the Panthers to come out of their lull. And it didn't really happen. The Saints, you know, answered with another touchdown after that. The offense did take advantage of a short field on the great peanut punch play.
That was a great play by Adams.
Mike Adams to set up the offense and, Then the offense cashed that in, made it a game at halftime. You're thinking, okay, lull over, we hope. And then the Panthers get the ball to start the second half as well. So what a game turner that potentially seemed to be. And then, you know, a three and out to start the second half. Probably shouldn't have been a three and out. There was a missed call by the officials there on third down. And then, boom, here come the Saints again. It got, you know, again, defense about to get off the field, three and out, have Mark Ingram stop short of the first down, and he somehow fights his way to a first down, and that's opened up the floodgates for another touchdown drive, 28-14, and then the offense never got out of the lull again until late. Obviously, they had a nice touchdown drive late, but it was a three-score game when that happened. It was just too little too late for the offense.
Yeah, it was, and they ultimately, the Panthers head home with their first loss in quite a while. This was obviously one, as we talked about, that a lot of people were pointing to in this collision course between the Saints and Panthers. And I know there's been a lot of upset fans after, just with the way things played out. But the Panthers were coming into this game with a four-game winning streak. So yep. They're 4-1 in their last five games. It's not the end of the world. You know, obviously, right. this team had put itself in a pretty good spot. Of course, the division race, as we talked about, is a situation that might be a little out of reach at this point, but wild card spot, very much there for them. Having said that, they've got themselves quite a stretch here, you know, coming out of the Saints game. Next up, Minnesota Vikings, who are playing about as good as football as anybody in the NFL. The following week, you've potentially got Aaron Rodgers coming back in his first game, the Green Bay Packers team that is fighting for their playoff lives. So this is a critical juncture in the season, of course, for this Panthers team. And not to get too far ahead, but obviously the matchup this week against that Minnesota Vikings team is one that is certainly an intriguing one coming off of what the Panthers just had to go through in New Orleans.
Yeah, I did in my head there. I was just thinking ahead a little bit to the Rodgers thing. Like, hadn't thought about that too much, and that is for the future. But, you know, the Packers are, like, inching out victories right now with Brett Hundley. I think they have the Browns this week.
Yeah,
so
did.
I just kind of thought about this. Unfortunate, but I guess it'd be an exciting scenario. You know, they could get up to 7-6 coming into that game next week against the Panthers. And, you know, if the Panthers slip against the Vikings, all of a sudden the winner of that game kind of has a heads up. So, yeah, the Packers aren't out of it. But, you know, as for the Vikings, first and foremost, I was thankful for the Vikings earlier Sunday, because before the Panthers game, they knocked off the Falcons, kept the Falcons out of the end zone the whole day. Matt Ryan had, I think, what was it, Jared, a 30-game streak of touchdown pass games with at least one touchdown pass that the Vikings ended. And that game was in Atlanta, I'm almost positive, correct?
It was, yep.
Yeah. So it's like, yay, that's, you know, the looks.
Yay.
So that was good. And then it's like,
that was
oh,
a really emphatic yay.
Yeah, yay. I'm sorry. And then after that, I was like, oh, wait a second. That's who we play this week. So, you know, I mean, yeah, that could be the best defense in the league that we're facing this week.
I remember
back to this time last year when the Vikings kind of fell apart for them eventually last year, but they were, you know, they looked like this. They started out 5-0 last year, their last unbeaten team, and one of those was in Charlotte when their defense, particularly in the second half, kind of ran over the Panthers' offensive line a little bit. So, tough matchup. They're the number one seed in the NFC as it currently stands. They have tiebreaker over the Eagles now, 10-2. They've won eight in a row.
They're rolling.
They are. So I don't want to say must win, but, you know.
It's a huge game.
It's a big game.
It's a huge game. Just like last week.
We like that.
Yeah. And just like last week, we talked about how fun it was going to be, the hype surrounding the game against the Saints and what was on the line again. This is, you want to be in these kind of conversations, right? I mean, you want to be, as to use the Ron Rivera phrase that's become famous, you want to be relevant this time of year. Of course, Panthers team is certainly relevant, but with that comes really tough matchups and really big games, and the pressure is going to continue to mount. As Ron will say, they got to take it one at a time. Well, this next one is a really tough one. This Vikings team, as we've laid out, is really, really good, and they're on an absolute roll. I think when you think about them, as you were kind of alluding to, Brian, the first thing you think about is that defense and the way that obviously they kind of had their way here in Charlotte last year. It was a dominant performance. And again, coming into this season, they've got great continuity, a lot of the same guys back from last year. Mike Zimmer, their head coach, is a terrific defensive coach, had so much success in Cincinnati just annually having a really strong defense.
Right.
He's brought that to Minnesota, and they're one of those teams now, a lot like the Panthers, where you think about them and people think about that defense and how good it is.
Yeah.
Right now they're number two in the NFL in total defense, number two in the NFL in points allowed per game, just giving up 17. it's a really good unit. And so we talked about the Panthers offense in our last segment about the Saints game. So you're coming off that game, and they're obviously trying to get things going a little more. Well, really tough task trying to do that against a Vikings defense that is about as stingy as it gets in the NFL.
But they don't have Captain Munnerlin anymore. So, you know, that we've
the
got
trade secrets. Maybe Captain can give them the blooper.
Yeah, it can't hurt. Obviously, Matt Khalil as well, kind of. The only team he's played for, he'll be facing Mike Remmers revenge game for the Vikings, right?
That's true, so. But I don't think Remmers is available. I think he's still been dealing with injury, so okay. I'm not sure we'll see Mike on the field.
All right, but anyway, Everson Griffin does kind of stir the drink for those guys.
I think 12 sacks for them.
I think that's a saying. That's only like fourth in the league. What are the sacks? I mean, who's got more sacks than that? That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is pretty good.
But they are an interesting team, and it does start with their defense. And on paper, you know, you think, how's this Panthers offense going to get going against this defense? That will be a big challenge. You know, on the other side, you want to think, well, I mean, I do think that the Panthers defense will make a strong bounce back, and they're always determined, but definitely determined to kind of prove that missed tackles and issues against the Saints was just kind of a blip on the map, that that's not who they are. And you would think that the Panthers defense could match up pretty well against the Vikings offense, but that's a sneaky good unit. I think, you know, a lot of the perception about the Vikings offense is Case Keenum, that, you know, who's Case Keenum, who's this guy at quarterback, like he's playing awesome though.
No doubt.
And again, and you just like, you think, okay, he can't keep this up. Basically, I think that's just human nature. And how many straight teams, eight straight teams, have thought he can't keep this up, and they've won every game. And you know, he's got some good weapons. Dalvin Cook, there, rookie running back. We were talking about those guys. He's not even in there. He's out for the season with an injury after a really good start. But they've kind of pieced it together with Latavius Murray at running back. And
Jerry McKinnon's been very good for them.
Yeah, and we were talking about, you know, we were just talking yesterday about Adam Thielen at wide receiver. Yeah. Everybody knows about Stephon Diggs, you know, big play potential guy. This Thielen guy, who's this guy?
He's been a nightmare to cover. Teams just can't cover him. Right. You know, he's been terrific. That was the other thing, of course, we were going to talk about with the Vikings. Was going to be, okay, they got an awesome defense. And it's like, what more do you need to say? They're just really, really good on defense. And this Case Keenum guy who's leading the offense. And you're absolutely right. I think everybody looks at it the same way. It's kind of like, all right, when is he going to kind of come back down to earth? But at a certain point, when he keeps doing this, it's almost like, I guess this is Case Keenum now.
Right.
Like, you just have to accept the fact that this guy is playing at this kind of level consistently enough to – that's his standard now, you know? And people, for everybody who's just waiting for him to suddenly start throwing picks and losing games for Minnesota, I think it's become pretty clear with the way they're rolling right now that they've got a very clear identity. He knows exactly what he needs to do to make enough plays and not turn the ball over. He's got a great defense supporting him and an offensive cast around him, starting with a really good offensive line that is going to put him in a position to succeed.
Yeah.
And all those pieces are fitting together so well. I don't think we're going to see suddenly Case Keenum fall off the map here and suddenly it's all going to go downhill for the Vikings. I think the guy has proven that he's the guy to lead this team.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of comes to your mind, I think, is last we saw Case Keenum as Panthers fans, it was in L.A. again when he played for the Rams last year. And
it just didn't
seem like they could do anything on offense.
No.
The natives were restless, put in Jared Goff, you know, and then he struggled. But I think Keenum actually went 4-5 as a starter with that team last year, which considering what that team looked like, you know, maybe he was even a little better last year than they realized. Not in that game against the Panthers, though. He was overwhelmed in that game. So you think about – and by the way, look at where Keenum and Goff are this year. You know, the Rams right there with the Vikings, with the Saints and the Eagles as far as teams that are really rolling in the NFC. So, yeah, I mean, they have a winning formula right now. You know, however it's pieced together, they're playing winning football. They're also not this overwhelming juggernaut that you think, oh, it's going to take a perfect game from the Panthers. I think it's going to take a much fewer mistake-ridden game
Absolutely.
For the Panthers. I mean, that goes without saying, but especially against this opponent. Like, it's going to be hard to move the ball. I think we can control their offense, but you can't make game – you can't have the balance of game-changing turnovers and takeaways and mistakes go against you like they did in New Orleans.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. As good as Minnesota is, I don't think they come in here and you don't think that they're necessarily going to get into a situation where they're going to put a whole bunch of points up on the board and the game will get out of reach. You know, they don't seem to be that kind of offense that's a quick strike type, put up points in a hurry and a shootout. I think as well as they play, if you're the Panthers and you protect the football and play clean, I think it's going to be a game.
Right.
You know, you're going to be in a game with these guys. And it's going to be tough to score points against this Vikings defense. We have established that pretty clearly. But I think we're on the same page in thinking that this Vikings offense, while as good as it's been, is not exactly going to light up the scoreboard.
Right.
You certainly wouldn't anticipate that happening against a Carolina defense that we certainly expect to rebound at home.
Yeah, I mean, how about this analogy, Max? We're both pretty big college basketball fans. I'm thinking about Virginia basketball.
Yeah.
I know you had to sit through a Virginia-Wisconsin
basketball
game recently. Your Badgers. And, it's kind of like they're the Virginia of the NFL because, you know, you watch them play games, you're like, oh, you're only down 7 points to Virginia. You know, you're right there. But, like, 7 points is a big
gap. That could feel like 14, right?
Right. I mean, last time I saw him play, it was like 40-33 against, I think it was the Wisconsin game, and it said 2 minutes left, and I thought that meant the first half, and it was in the game.
Yep.
You know, that kind of dynamic. So you can't – and we talked about this with the game last year. It's really a similar situation. You can't afford to get behind this team. Like, the Panthers had a chance to get off to a great start last year, if you remember that game. Lots of scoring opportunities in the first half. And what was the score at halftime? It was some wacky, like, 10-8 or something like that, when the Panthers could have had a multi-score lead. And then, sure enough, the Vikings kind of clamped down in the second half. And so you can't – you have to get – I mean, cliche, sure, but you, especially against a team like this, you can't fall behind, slash, you have to get off to a good start.
Yeah, I just think if the Panthers are able to protect the football – and not make some of these really, you know, catastrophic mistakes like fumbling a punt or, you know, giving the Vikings a short field with a fumble. I mean, those type of things, I think they're going to be in this game. And like we've laid out, this is a really good Vikings team, but I think it's going to be there for the taking in the fourth quarter if the Panthers can play clean football. And that's a situation where, as you're mentioning, you know, maybe if you're down a score against the Vikings, it might feel like you're right there for it. But as this Vikings defense has proven, you know, it is hard to get that one needed score against that unit at times. So it sets up for what's going to be no doubt a difficult game. It's two good football teams. And that's what you want to see this time of year, right? I mean, it's December. It's a lot on the line. And this is going to be an interesting one for sure.
Yeah, I'm going to make a real awkward segue here, Max.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that I do think the Panthers will be hungry come Sunday. You see the segue there?
It's a pretty awkward segue.
It is very awkward, but isn't it time for some food for thought as we, you know, look towards Sunday?
I think it is. I think, what you got for us?
Well, what have I got for you? What did I have for you this morning, Max?
I brought
in a cranberry casserole. Our loyal listeners will remember the amazing podcast before Thanksgiving where we had various people break down their Thanksgiving traditions, and I think Melissa, our photographer, brought up a cranberry cook-off, various forms of cranberry. That has not developed, but I went ahead and brought in my cranberry casserole this morning. I wouldn't say it was a super hit. I think it's solid.
It's fair to say.
I enjoy it. I really like it at Thanksgiving. I think the fact that I just had it 2 weeks ago maybe took away from it a little bit for me. And maybe I'm just not that good of a cook, although there's not much cooking involved with that.
No, I don't think you can't criticize yourself really for that. I think you did as good a job as you can with it. To me, it was like red Jell-O with all the other ingredients mixed in there, which was pretty good. But I don't think, people weren't going to be doing cartwheels after taking a bite of that and being like, that was the best thing they've ever tasted.
Yeah. Is that, I mean, you know, and I call it cranberry casserole. I don't know if that's the official name, but it was in a casserole dish.
Yes.
I know you may have some hot takes on casseroles in general.
Now that's a good transition.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, we try to make these Food for Thought segments somewhat related to the week or the matchup or whatever. So with Minnesota Vikings coming to town, one of the big Minnesota trademark kind of dishes is the casserole.
Okay.
It's like upper Midwest kind of thing. Minnesota is kind of famous for, especially when they deal with how cold it is, you know, most of the time for them, how long the winter is. A nice casserole is generally a go-to for them. It's also called, I found this out recently, a hot dish is what some will call it instead of a casserole, which
is
interesting.
I had a cold dish this morning, though, so casserole doesn't have to be hot. Aren't most
food
items hot, though?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be, but yeah, I guess this one, You know, as long as it involves some sort of like meat, starch, whatever, you throw it into a big thing, put it in the oven, and you've got yourself a casserole or hot dish.
I wonder about that name. My theory would be like, when I think about casserole, I think about like, you know, it's a Southern tradition in some ways as well, like potluck. Mm-hmm. I know you've heard that term. You know, growing up in the Southern Baptist Church, you'd have like homecoming, and then everybody would bring their own food to like, and so you could sample food, you know, I don't know, 100 things of these. And you know, the ladies with the casseroles probably had like the oven mitts on. You know, they're putting it down on the table carefully because you got all that space that you've got to carry it, because it's, you know, it's pretty big. So maybe that's where the hot dish. I don't know. I'm just
you're
trying
really
to,
breaking it down.
I'm trying.
I'm digging this. Yeah, I'm really breaking down the casserole.
I'm visualizing it piping hot. I will say, I have mixed feelings about casseroles in general. I mean, despite all this food talk, I am actually a picky eater about some things. Yeah. Like, I'm very anti-onion, especially raw onion.
We could do a whole
onion
episode on your anti-onion take.
Right. So, a lot of times with casserole, especially if you didn't make them, you don't really know what's in there.
That's true.
Like,
that's true.
You know, sometimes I think people may just, you know, throw some extra stuff in there, just making the, oh, look at this. You know, this won't be good much longer. Let me just toss that in there.
Yeah.
So, I need to have some confidence in what I'll be trying to seek out the person that made it in those settings. If it looks good, I'll be like, hey, what's in this casserole? It's got
so
onions
like next
in
to the
it?
Casserole, there should be like a little notepad or note card that says like, here's what's inside.
Yeah,
of
well,
this.
Especially if people have allergies, of course, right? I don't have food allergies per se, luckily, but yeah, that's my biggest beef with casseroles probably. But of course, also in that setting, I'm talking about like the potluck. You can always taste it and just take a little taste and then go back for more, although the lines can be really bad at those.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's kind of tricky.
Well, you know, and what I'll throw into this, of course, obviously, my wife being from Minnesota, I have some Minnesota eating experience, no doubt, and her family, my wife's mom actually makes a casserole that I love.
Yeah.
How about this? Because I agree with you. I think when you hear the word casserole, it doesn't get people too jazzed.
Right.
But she makes what she calls a pizza party casserole.
Oh, boy.
Which I think is fantastic. You've got, obviously, it's kind of like, you know, any sort of pasta you really want to throw. She uses kind of like the spiral pasta, and then there's like pepperoni, sausage, cheese, all mixed in there. Throw it in, take it back out. You've got what you call a pizza party casserole.
Is it particularly cheesy, like gooey,
cheesy? It's excellent. Yeah.
Onions.
I'm not as aware of the onion as you are, obviously. So there might be some in there that I don't even really notice, but I don't think so.
Yeah,
think so.
I mean, I know I've met your mother-in-law. I trust her that I'd give it a shot. I'd go and get a big helping of that without asking questions. I've never had a pizza casserole.
Doesn't that sound pretty good?
A hamburger casserole or.
This is the great thing about a casserole. You can really make anything out
of
it, right? You know?
That's true. I mean, a Southern staple is the green bean casserole. I mean, I do mostly like that. And that's interesting because that's usually topped with those fried onions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like here bashing onions, but those are fine with me.
Oh, those are good.
Like, I mean,
those
I guess that would be another subject that you can fry almost anything and I'll eat it, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
they fried it. You know, if they fry it, Strickland will eat it. That's pretty much how that goes.
There you go. Oysters. I mean, you know, I don't really like oysters, but you fry them up, I'm there. So.
Absolutely. Well, before we could keep going about fried food on a whole other separate interview. So whole separate podcast. We might as well just cut this.
Yeah,
one
Green
off,
Bay
so.
Next week. I mean, obviously they have.
We'll talk about some fried things. We'll talk about fried things next week with Green Bay. Absolutely. Any last thoughts before we head into this big game, Bri?
Just glad the Panthers are at home. You know, 3 straight games at home, obviously. You know, glad to be on the natural grass. Ron Rivera talked about
that. Oh, my God. Everybody is jumping back over themselves being back on grass. We haven't really talked about that at all, though.
Right.
Greg Olsen not playing against the Saints. Hopefully they get him back here against the Vikings.
Right.
That would help.
Yeah, a couple of tough games on tough turf. And so get on that nice soft grass, you know, get Greg out there, hopefully, maybe Ryan Khalil, and heal up the linebackers. And, again, I mean, the Panthers always are determined and fired up. I think, you know, we'll see a particularly fired up unit running out of the tunnel here at Bank of America Stadium.
It's not the playoffs yet, but this certainly kind of has a playoff atmosphere around here, doesn't it? You're talking about the Saints, who no doubt are going to be in the postseason at this point. Talking about a Vikings team that, as you mentioned, is tops in the NFC. Big, big games this time of year. You got to be playing your best football, and after a setback last week, the Panthers need to get themselves back on track in a hurry.
Yeah, and it'll be fun, Max. Like, you know, week 14 last year didn't quite have the buzz that week 14 this year does.
Absolutely. All right, everybody, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time here on the Panthers Podcast.